Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Today's guest was notified that his personal information had been compromised when the Office of Personnel Management's computer system was hacked. Now, this had special meaning for my guest because he's an expert in cybersecurity law, and he believes that our laws get in the way of our ability to track and prevent cyber attacks, and we're going to find out why. My guest is Robert Dietz. He is a professor of public policy at George Mason University. Bob, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Now, this is a very interesting thing. I read an article that you had written in the Washington Times about a flaw in cybersecurity law, and I was quite transported by what you had to say, never thinking about the fact that we're being hacked. Why can't we hack back? So tell me, what was the impetus for this article that you did?
It's funny you put it that way, because I've actually been banging this drum for quite a while. I first gave a speech about it maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and have been really unsuccessful in gaining any traction on the issue. The fundamental problem is this. In any kind of cyber attack, we would like to know who did it. And, you know, the term of art is attribution. To whom can we claim did this? Who can we claim did this? And that's an incredibly important issue, mainly because if you want to do something in response, you need to know the entity or the person you're aiming at. It turns, you know, I often analogize it to some sort of missile attack. If a missile attack happened in this country, if, you know, some bombs landed someplace, you'd say to Department of Defense, well, where did they come from? And if Department of Defense said, well, I don't know, but we think, we'd be outraged. You'll notice that whenever there's a cyber attack, experts, often unidentified, will say something like, we believe it came from China, or we think it came from North Korea, and so forth. And that's because we generally don't know. And so, to my mind, it is crucially important that we understand who is doing cyber attacks. The most effective way of doing cyber attack, of determining who's doing cyber attacks, is what is called in the trade hacking back. And what that entails is starting with the attack on your computer, going back to each stop on the way back to the origin of the attack. And we currently are not lawfully able to do that.
So if someone hacks, as with the OPM,
yep.
And I believe, was that attributed, or somebody thought it was from the Chinese, or did?
Yes, it was thought to be.
Well, now, how can they say they think it is if they don't really know?
I mean, there are a number of ways that could be determined. One is hacking style.
Okay.
You know, hackers have their own sort of signatures, as it were, mm-hmm. and sort of styles of attack, and often that is the way it's guessed.
Okay, so we look at this and we think, okay, I think this came from China because it's following a certain pattern in the
exactly.
way that it was done. Now, so our laws say, well, you've been hacked, but you can't hack back. And,
right.
And that is a little strange. I mean,
well,
I watch.
It's understandable that the law was created the way it is. You know, the principal law here is the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. And the idea was when this law was passed that we didn't want Americans hacking into the computers of other Americans or hacking
right.
in any place else. And that's certainly understandable. We don't allow wiretaps from one citizen to another. So the law made sense. Unfortunately, there is no exception within the law for the government to determine who is doing hacking.
Okay.
And that's, to me, a substantial flaw.
All right. So right now, the way it works is our laws say, nope, you can't hack back. And as you mentioned in your article, part of that has to do with the fact that these hackers use a network of computers that are innocent and have nothing to do with this, but their computers are just forwarding on. Would that be called a botnet? Are they in part of a botnet?
No, not. I don't think that would be the term for it.
Okay.
Hackers know American law, and they know that hacking back is unlawful. And so what they tend to do is, let's say it comes from country X overseas.
Okay.
Their hackers will come into the United States and, say, enter a computer server at the XYZ Corporation. They'll then go from there to a university server and then hop to some person's server and so forth, hopping around the country until they finally break into, say, OPM or Department of Defense or wherever else they're trying to enter into a computer system.
And this hopping around is they're hoping to cover their tracks.
Exactly.
I assume. Putting
exactly.
you at dead ends when you go back and, okay, well, this university didn't hack me. Why is it coming through them? So then
exactly.
the problem arises because the government, in order to do this, track this hacking, would have to go through all of these computers that have been involved in this network that transmitted the hacker's information. Is that correct?
That's right. And
okay.
The universities are deliberately chosen because – for very good reasons, universities are concerned about what's on their computer networks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the idea of the government sort of going into a university server, not with the intention of looking around in that server, but simply to find the hacker and then take the next step back, would, of course, be of concern. And again, hackers know this.
Okay. So they're familiar with our laws. Well, let's get them back. All right. Now, right now, in order to effectively get permission to attack back, hack back,
yep.
you'd have to go through a series of legal maneuvers to get permission to go into each of the servers that were in part of this whole network.
Yeah, there are basically only two laws that would allow government officials to do a hack back. One is a law I'm sure you're familiar with the term FISA, Foreign
Yes.
Intelligence Surveillance Act
mm-hmm.
order. This is the order that NSA and FBI and other agencies use in order to basically do wiretaps.
Mm-hmm.
The other way is basically a criminal warrant under Title III. And where you go and get a warrant to enter into a computer system. The problem is neither of these statutes, in my view, could form a strong basis for obtaining for handling the problem at hand. In both of them, if you sought an order, you would only get one step back to the first
to the most
recent computer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand.
That hacked into you.
Okay.
I do not believe any court would say, yeah, feel free to hack back as far as it goes until you get to the foreign country.
Well, how can let's take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Robert Dietz. He is a professor of public policy at George Mason University. He has worked with the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, and a whole long list of impressive agencies. Bob, and we're so delighted to have you on the program today. Anyway, now going back to this, so it would require a change of law in order to get this accomplished.
What, I believe so, yes.
Where would it start? I mean, where would, all right, let's suppose you were given carte blanche to solve this problem. How would you do it?
If I were czar of the universe,
okay, we're making you the czar.
I would start by creating a law, and I would do it in a very open way. I wouldn't try to, blow anything past the American citizenry. I would explain the problem and talk to universities and say, look, with no intention on your part at all, hackers are going through your systems. And we need to try to stop that. It is not tolerable to have DOD and OPM, to name just two of the agencies where there's been serious hacking.
Mm-hmm.
It's not tolerable to have this. So we need to do something. And what I propose in the op-ed piece I wrote is a regime, that could, I called it the, federal cybersecurity defense court, but it would be a federal court somewhat similar to FISA, in which you would the relevant authorities, the FBI, would go into the court and say, look, the Pentagon is under persistent attack. It is important for us to find out who's doing this hacking, and so we want an order from you allowing us to go back through all the various systems that the hacker's gone through in order to get the country of origin and the computer of origin.
Wow. So,
and then the federal judge, you know, if he's persuaded by the facts presented in an affidavit or declaration, would say, okay, you can do that. And at least in my mind's eye, I picture all kinds of restrictions. For example, if this regime, the first hop was back through the George Mason University server, there would be restrictions that says, you know, when you're in that server, you can't sort of look around and, you know, right, out of curiosity to see what else is going on. You're restricted purely to finding this hacker and then taking the next step back.
Okay. I'm fascinated by all this because I don't really understand how people hack through a system. But, you know, for example, Sony was hacked recently.
Yep.
OPM. All of these hacks that have been happening, and we're not fighting back. So obviously, is it not possible to protect each of these entities without having to get an all-encompassing law to allow us to hack back? Can we not set up cybersecurity that would be adequate to keep the hackers out?
Look, you're raising a great question. And by the way, you mentioned those two, but imagine if hackers get into major banks. Imagine the disruption that could arise, or into ATM systems. To answer your question, what you're talking about, of course, is what I refer to in this op-ed piece as creating moats. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what surrounds all these government agencies, is electronic moats. The problem is, just like, you know, in the old days of moats around castles, weaponry effectively made it clear that they weren't sufficient. And I don't believe in the cyber world one can only play defense. I think that for example, if a cyber attack were traced to North Korea or to China, for example, or Russia, we could go to the Russians or the Chinese or the North Koreans and say, look, this isn't speculation. We know this attack came from the XYZ computer in Pyongyang.
Do we suspect that the government...
You better stop it.
Do we suspect that the governments are behind it, or is
of course
they're stealing secrets, they're stealing everything? Well,
of course,
I mean,
you
know,
it.
It's like there's a time bomb sitting there waiting to go off from all of this personal data that's been stolen. I mean, my organization has been on the forefront of talking about identity theft. What these people could
that,
do.
But, you know, you let your mind use your imagination, and you can see some really awful things. Many systems in this country and other countries are controlled now by so-called SCADA systems, dams, electrical generation plants, gas transmission lines.
Right.
These are all controlled by computers.
Yep. And if they go down, if they're hacked, you could shut out all the electricity. You could shut down the country effectively.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, I know. I've talked to some friends. I have one friend who keeps saying that this is going to happen. Our electric grid is vulnerable. So and much more. Well, also,
yes.
I think about the ability to shut down hospitals. Hospitals have been subjected to cyber attacks.
Absolutely.
They've been effectively shut down because their servers have been overloaded because they've been bombarded with data coming in and they can't handle it. So there's all kinds of horrible things that can happen. So Why are we not interested in looking at this? I mean, it's kind of appalling to me that we sit here and say, okay, here I am. We're a free and open society. Just come and get our data.
Yeah, look, that's a great question, and I can offer an answer. NSA is suspected by, you know, some percentage of Americans as basically up to nefarious deeds. You know, they're trying to listen in on all phone conversations and so forth, and so people are distrustful of them, which is why I've suggested not a law that just says to NSA or FBI, here, go do whatever you want, but a law that says, yes, you can hack back, but only if you go through a federal court which will provide the oversight needed to make sure that the American people are comforted by the fact that this is all being done under the law.
Well, I think if they put it in the bigger perspective of the damage that can be done by the hacking, they might be a little bit more comfortable with fighting back.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So perhaps one of the things that needs to be accomplished is for the public to truly understand the magnitude of what can happen here.
Well, sure. Look, you can hack back and destroy the host computer. I mean, if countries really want to go to that level,
sure,
defensiveness, you can say, look, this is, if you don't stop this, this is what we are going to do, and we have the capability of doing it.
Well, that might be an impetus to stop some of the hacking that's going on. I want to take a brief pause, but I want to come back and talk about what is the scope of hacking that's going on now? You know, we're hearing some of the public things that have happened, but I've got to believe that there's a whole lot more stuff that we don't even know about that's happening. So anyway,
yes, that's a good topic.
Yeah, let's just come back and talk about that. But I want to take a brief pause here,
yep,
to let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker, and my guest today is Robert Dietz. He's a professor of public policy at George Mason University, and we're talking about how our laws get in the way of protecting us against cyber attacks. So anyway, Bob, going back to this, picking up where I left off. So what can we do, and where are we going?
Well, you know, I've been around Washington too long, which is to say my entire career. But I'm skeptical that much of anything can be done in advance. We always need to have something horrible happen, and then we react. My concern, my worry is that it's going to take some sort of really big monumental attack to finally wake us up to the threat.
Oh, that's scary.
And I think that'd be too bad. But that, you know, again, just being in Washington, seeing how we tend not to anticipate, but tend generally to react,
mm-hmm,
I can't help thinking that's where we're going.
Okay, now
intermediate steps, though, that could be done right now with the legal authorities we have. For example, you can do in terms of stuff being sent out of agencies and so forth. There's a thing called keystroke auditing. Basically, it means that every stroke you touch on your computer is recorded not just in your computer but elsewhere. So that if stuff leaves in an unauthorized way, you can find out how to get out of here. A second thing, one of the things that hackers do with the Pentagon is download documents. You could easily have a device that would prevent sending out more than, say, 5 pages or 10 pages, at which time an alert would go to the IT experts, and they'd say, wait a minute, why are 500 pages of documents, mm-hmm, being sent out of here?
That makes sense.
I know in my career when I've thought about how many pages have I ever sent, 10 pages, maybe 15.
Mm-hmm.
But what often happens in the Pentagon is hundreds of pages are sent out through hack-ins. I mean, there are intermediate steps that could be done. It's not like there's nothing can happen.
So these are signs.
But I think in order to create a law, something bad is going to have to happen.
So these are signs that the cyber attack hacking is going on. Now, what is the scope of this, Bob? Does anybody really know?
I think it's huge. I was told by a person who an expert in this area, who says that when you plug in your home computer, the day you buy it and you plug it in and you get on the internet, that within an hour you've been attacked 100 times.
Oh yeah, I don't doubt it.
General Keith Alexander, the former director of NSA, said in a speech, and I may have the number wrong, but it's certainly of this magnitude, that something like 10,000 hack attacks, come to the Pentagon every day.
Wow.
It's an incredible number. Now, you know, many of them are prevented and stopped. But, you know, in the system we have at GMU, we have a spam filter, and it's great. It captures a lot of stuff, but certainly a lot of stuff gets past it.
Are we are we really not doing any hacking back? Are we really abiding by the law? That makes me angry. I think we ought to hack back.
I I do not, to the best of my knowledge, you know, the organizations that have the wherewithal to do it completely obey the law. And when I say the wherewithal, I mean like NSA specifically, FBI maybe, Homeland Security maybe. But to the best of my knowledge, they do obey the law.
Okay. Well,
when I was general counsel of NSA, I can tell you we totally obeyed the law.
Yeah, you saw to that. I can believe that, Robert. All right, Bob. Let's look to the future. You think that we're going to have something catastrophic happen before we can actually get people to do something about this? That is, that to me is so scary, and I don't want to accept that. What do you suggest to the American people that they do? Get in touch with their congressmen and Congress, send it to your congressman, your representative, and your senator, and tell them you want them to get off their duff and do something about the laws? Is that the place to start?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly know more about this than I do. You know, sort of how do you get political action? And it's a great question. I think certainly that's one way. You know, I think the administration needs to talk more about this. You know, because it hasn't happened to us, it's so easy to feel complacent.
Until you something like OPM, you don't feel complacent because you know that somebody's got all of your personal data, do you? I'm sure you don't.
Somebody's got my personal data, I assume. In fact, I got a subsequent thing that said that, mine was one of the names that was taken. To be honest, I haven't done much of anything about it. You know, I look at my bank accounts and stuff like that with, you know, fairly attentively. But you know, it's really hard to stay on top of all of these things.
Of course it is. Yes. And you know, that's probably part of what the hackers are counting on. And
absolutely.
Then, the delay of time often gives people a sense of safety and comfort, which
absolutely.
Can be so totally misleading because you
don't
know.
Right.
You don't know. That data is still good, no matter how long ago they hacked it.
No, exactly. I mean, it's not like Social Security numbers change. And you know, I have this, when I'm in a dark humor sort of way, I think about waking up one day and opening up, you know, my 401k account and finding out it's at zero.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
That's not funny. I'm sorry about laughing.
No, it's darkly humorous, actually.
Yes, it is. You're right. And that could happen. I mean.
Yes, it could.
It's just. Well, I don't know. It gets a little scary. Listen, I've been involved in computers. I used to be a computer programmer. I don't understand the hacking, though. Yes, this was a long time ago that I used to write programs. But to me, it just boggles my mind because I think the internet is such a wonderful thing. But my God, it is such a weapon to be used against us if we don't protect ourselves.
I was speaking to a person who was involved in the development of the internet. It started out, as you know, from a project of DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and this person was saying that the net as it was developed at DARPA was never intended to be used to grow the way it has. And in fact, the internet does not have lots of security features that would be on it if it were being developed today for its use today.
Well, yes, of course. How can you imagine how something is going to develop and grow? I mean, I think it certainly boggles my mind. But at any rate, you have given us a lot to think about. You don't make me a lot more comfortable, however, I have to tell you. this is, you're sitting here thinking, oh, he's going to give me some great answers, but actually it's going to require a lot of effort, and let's hope that something is done before we have a major catastrophe, Bob. Thank you so much for being with us. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking with you today.
It was my pleasure, Shirley. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I've been speaking with Robert Dietz, who is a professor of public policy at George Mason University. And we've been telling you the scary stuff. And believe me, it's not science fiction. It's scary and it's happening all over the place. I'm Shirley Rooker. If you want to get in touch with me, you can reach me at shirley@callforaction.org. Thank you for joining us.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.